these are just different people's different quotes about how to do these things, and we can do this later. So that's the first, 94.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it might be helpful if we start writing it down, and then you can, on our own time, we can.
So we're going to flip to the next page. It says reduce stress, increase concentration and peace. Then it says open energy channels. Definitely is doing that. Release impurities, right? So just go a little deeper. Then you're going to get to a section called adjustment guidelines. We'll do some adjustments today, but we're going to skip through that right now because you need to know the poses before you can adjust them. Talks about physical assists and verbal assists, energetic adjustments, therapeutic touch, physical adjustments. Keep going. Then you get to asana categories. Okay? So asana categories and families. Why we practice a pose and how to teach it. Movements of the spine. So you guys did a little bit of that. You did a little bit of anatomy the week prior, right? Or mm-hmm. a couple of, and yeah. Did you talk about these movements of the spine?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah.
All right, so here it says, it's got these pictures. This woman's in Sukhasana, she's rotating, right? Rotation is in the transverse plane. So I'll just add these because they're actually in here, which is nice. It's good to know the planes of movement. Transverse twisting. TT, that's how I always remember it. Transverse planes, twisting plane. My spine is not twisting, right? Mm-hmm. I'm in the transverse plane. Okay. The next pose, we've got movement in the sagittal plane. Sagittal plane.
Could you show me the page you're on? Okay. What does it say at the top?
Movements of the spine, that's what the bar. Sorry, I know we don't have page numbers. Definitely right there, John.
Thank you.
Okay. Sagittal plane is the front and back of the body.
Oh, I see.
So if I'm standing here, this is movement in the sagittal plane. I'm moving in the front of the body and the back of the body. Not twisting. Twisting, transverse plane. And then the coronal plane is side movement. Abduction, abduction. So do you see how here, now moving my arms and my legs out to the sides. And it's good to know these. You're not going to ever teach that class. You're not going to go, everybody, move your leg in the sagittal plane. They'll look at you like you're crazy. They have no idea what that means. But when we're talking about things, it might be helpful to know these planes, okay? Because that's how we talk about movement.
Nicole, what was that again for the side plane, the name? I wasn't keeping up.
Coronal.
Coronal.
Yeah, and what's interesting is they don't have it as coronal here, but you can cross out frontal plane and you can write coronal, because that's actually technically correct, is coronal. I've seen that in other books, but it's a little bit confusing because then people are like, well, you still told me sagittal is the front and the back of the body, and now you've got this frontal plane in place.
Well, this is frontal, right?
Yeah, so. Yes, but it's confusing to people. So I call it, it's called coronal also.
So I think they describe it as if you slice your body right from your front to your back is coronal, and sagittal is if you slice it from left to right.
It's the opposite.
I'm sorry, sagittal. Yeah, from left to right.
There's a cool picture. I'll try to find a picture that I have of that. But just think, if I'm moving my arms out, and I think of it, my teacher used to call it curtains. Like, you open your curtains, and that's coronal, CC. Right. Transverse twisting, TT. And then sagittal, unfortunately, doesn't really have an acronym, I guess. Okay. So, forward bends are sagittal, because I'm moving forward with my spine. Flexion and extension. Flexion, forward. In this case, extension, The spine is extending backwards.
Forward flexion.
Extension. Back bends are extension. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Those are just some fun things to know. Okay, so key poses of yoga. This manual has all different opinions and different types of teachers of yoga that's translated, and so you're going to see different things in different ways. These are different categories that other teachers have categorized as a method of sequencing. I'm just going to have you just ignore this for now. But that's what this is. It's saying the key poses of yoga, people sequence differently, depending on what form of yoga you're coming from. I sequence different than other teachers, based on what I've learned. Okay. And I'm just letting you know that that's what that is. Pose categories is the next one. This is what we're going to be. Here's a summary of the poses. So we have warm-up poses. Okay, these are like stretches, simple things that are easy to prepare you for the sun salutations, or maybe it's an imprint for the peak pose down the road. If I'm going to do a twisting class, the first seat could be Sukhasana with a twist. You know, so something relatively easy for everybody to start with. And here I'm going to start imprinting the navigation or the architecture of where I'm going. Okay. So these are simple poses that most people can do. They're stretches. Today I started doing the warm-up in Shavasana, which can be a nice place to start. It's really easy for beginners to start in Shavasana. It's like not scary. They're like, oh good, it's not yet. And then the nice thing about that is then you can get into some core work and some leg work. But that's considered warm-up in this case today. Then I mixed up the sun salutations just for all of you just to see different kinds of sun salutations, but we did some half sun salutations, we did some lunge sun salutations, so you see, and then we did A. I did 1B. I didn't really do a lot of these. Then we have standing asanas. We did standing asanas today. I stepped you out, which is non-traditional for probably most vinyasa classes, but I stepped you out and I did a prostrate legs, and then we did triangle pose, and then we came back to prostrate, then we did triangle on the other side, and we came back, and then we did, I think, warrior two on both sides, and then we came back, and then we stepped you to the middle. And so those are standing asanas.
Okay?
Obviously, you're standing up. But then we did standing balance pose, right? We did a tree pose, we did an Utthita Hasta and Tadasana pose, just to play around with our balance. Standing balance poses are good to do after some of the standing asanas because now you've warmed up your muscles and you have a little bit more stability and strength, and so that's required for the standing balance poses. I did my core in the beginning. Again, you can switch things up. I might do core after standing balances too. It's a great place to put it. Arm balances they have in here is like kind of another category. This isn't in any particular order necessarily, it's just categories of poses. Core can be anywhere. It can be at the beginning, it could be in the middle, it could be at the end. You know, up to you. Arm balances. You wouldn't want to put arm balances in the beginning of a class. You have to warm up to them, you have to get pretty strong, and by mid class time you get into arm balances if you even use them. Like, we didn't have any. Next stage, back bends. Back bends come later because back bends require a lot of opening and it requires a lot of hip opening as well as upper body opening strength. So they're more, again, towards the middle. And then you have twists. Twists can be done like core, interspersed anywhere, because they're one of those things that's pretty accessible to most people, except for, I'll just add, some of the standing balance twists. Those are pretty intense. So like things like, I don't even know if I can do this right now, but things like this, right, that's a pretty intense one. Mm-hmm. Like triangle twists can be intense for some people. I would put those in the standing, but you know, some of these twists like this, Ardha Chandrasana twists, these are pretty big poses for people. So I would put them a little bit more towards the middle too, because they require a lot. But seated twists, Anything like a forward fold twist, yeah, like seated twists, right? Things like that. Those are accessible in the beginning. Then you have forward bends. Forward bends are traditionally towards the end of class because they bring you down, and they bring you down into your nervous system, relaxation, etc. They're also good prep poses for things like inversions, if it's a cooling inversion. So a shoulder stand, you have to have really open hamstrings to get into a shoulder stand and core strength. So shoulder stands usually are towards the end. They're also really relaxing for the body. You have to have your hamstrings really open. So forward folds, like Paschimottanasana, would precede a shoulder stand to open up the hips, okay? You're focusing on stretching the back of the body in a forward bend, which is why it's a good counter to a back bend. Because a back bend is an extension, and a forward fold, you're doing the opposite. So a lot of these categories are called they're like counter poses, countering the energy of the other poses. A back bend is very energizing, really heart opening, right? It takes a lot of effort and strength and openness. And then a forward fold will take that energy and bring it all back to you, harness it so that you can relax. I think I was saying yesterday, you wouldn't want to end a class. You wouldn't want to do all back bends and then just end the class. People would walk out and they'd be like, "Whoa!" Like their nervous system would just be like, "Whoa," you know? So we're always looking to balance. That's why I did a few standing poses. The class is relatively balanced. I mean, I did a couple standing balance poses. And then we did some core. We didn't do any real back bends except in the sun salutations. I was just doing basically Tadasana standing poses today, and then cooling you down with a couple of forward bends and just some hip openers just to kind of relax you until the end. So it was a real simple class. Hip openers are generally towards the end because when you do a lot of back bends, you have to do hip openers to help the outer hips that have just worked really hard in back bends. Inversions, they have here, it's interesting because, so there's two different types of inversions. There's heated inversions and there's cooling inversions. Heated inversions are things like Pinchamayurasana peacock pose, headstand, Shirsasana, handstand, Adho Mukha, Adho Mukha Vrikshasana. Here they're showing the shoulder stand. So shoulder stand is a cooling inversion, and a headstand is a heated inversion. So I would put a headstand towards like the middle of the class versus at the end of the class.
Is it because you have to like work more to like keep your muscles engaged?
And the head's on the floor, which is very yang energy. Whereas the shoulder stand, everything's draining to your heart, basically.
Okay.
And so that's actually relaxing for the heart.
Okay.
And your neck, you know, much like a bridge, is relaxed, right, in the shoulder stand.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually much more yin, more receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there anything else other than shoulder stand as a cooling
one? I mean, I wouldn't say so. I would say most of them are all keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah. Handstands. Yeah. And then there's versions of shoulder stand, like legs at the wall, the Burrito Karani. That's a nice one where you just put your hips. You guys know that one? It's just this legs at the wall. Hips are against the wall. You turn, and you're here. That's a porting basically shoulder stand, but it's a different pose, but it's essentially the same thing. You're just pulling all the blood to your digestive tract, which puts you automatically in the parasympathetic nervous system, rest and digest response.
Is that under the restoratives or the inversion?
Probably under the restoratives. Yeah,
it's an inversion and an inversion. Yeah.
A down dog is an inversion. The heart's below the legs, mm-hmm. So that's also but it's one of those inversions that's so mild, most people can do them. There's not a ton of contraindications to down dog. is restorative. So the pose families, the way that they outline it in this manual is Tadasana family, which I like, you know, because it is true. Things are in Tadasana. They outline it as also Uttanasana family, forward fold family.
Where's that? Okay, you're looking at.
Oh, so now after pose categories, it says pose families.
Pose family?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
May I give page numbers so we can start getting on the same page? And I can even put them in yours if you want.
I know. It's her manual, but I can. You can do that. I don't mind.
So the pose families one that says Tadasana at the top, that's 116.
Oh, 16. Number things?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So then you can just kind of.
You went and numbered every page?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I didn't get all the way through, but.
Good. So this is 116 pose
families?
Yeah. Okay.
Pose families.
Okay.
Ah, so
great.
Okay. Thank you.
It's so funny. I looked at this the other day and I was like so confused by it. But after doing all of yesterday, then it's like, oh, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
This page.
This page.
Number one. Okay. So we've got Tadasana mountain pose, yeah. Plank, right? It just looks the same as Tadasana, except the arms are in the sagittal plane or in flexion. I know this is gonna, but I'm just gonna let you know. So I'm in Tadasana, sagittal plane, my arms went into flexion to get into plank. It's just good to know this stuff eventually. You'll get to know it, you know, as you get into sequencing, how hips are moving and stuff, so you'll want to know what's going into flexion and what's going into extension. Because that's how you're going to prep bodies for certain poses. Handstand, my arms are in flexion. They're still in flexion. Right? When my arms are behind me, in the sagittal plane, they're in extension. And so why is that important? I'll just tell you why. Because if I'm going to do a handstand class, most of the poses I'm going to do, like today, you're like, my arms are tired. So I'm doing all these things with your arms over your ears. That would have been a good sequence to get you to a place of strong arms so that you could go into your handstands.
Oh, God.
Eventually. But eventually, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I were to do a shoulder stand, like let's say my peak or shoulder stand at the end of the class, like I knew I was going there or I was going to do a bunch of bridges and things like that, I would do a class with a lot of this kind of stuff, like maybe forward folds with arms in extension this way, prostrations this way. I might do lunges, crescent lunges like this, or I might do humble warriors with my arm. So I could do camel pose with my arms in extension. All of these would get me to that place of needing to be in my chest in a different way, right? For shoulder stand, bridges, right? So you need to know which direction your arms are going in so that you can start to layer the cake, so to speak. So arms are in flexion if they're moving forward, flexion, behind you, extension. Hip flexors are called hip flexors because they're in flexion. I honestly didn't get that until like 5 years after I started teaching. I was like, what? Oh my God, hip flexors, flexion, okay. And then extension, back. And when you're back bend, your legs are in extension. Okay? In like Bhujangasana, for example. I mean, look over. If I'm using the Sanskrit, you don't know it, just raise your hand. I realize it's second nature to me, but it's not to everybody. Okay, so Tadasana, plank, Adho Mukha Rikshasana, which is handstand. Okay, Chaturanga Dandasana, still in Tadasana. Yeah? We talked about that. That's a terrible picture, FYI. She's completely out of alignment with her hands.
Oh, yeah.
Bad picture.
Oh, which one?
The bottom right. Yeah, that's not a good picture. It should be at a 90 degree angle. Okay.
The four limb scap pose?
Yeah.
What's wrong with her?
See how her wrists are in front of her elbow? They need to be underneath the elbow.
Uh-huh.
That would be the proper position.
Okay.
And then you have Uttanasana family. Uttanasana, Paddha Vistasana, Paddha Hastasana. These are all forward folds. see some people still teaching Padmasana, Padmasana. Padmasana is grabbing the toes, the big toes, and Padmasana is putting the whole palm underneath your feet. But you have to be pretty open to do those. That's why I don't generally see those poses taught that much anymore. Because they're pretty, you'd have to be pretty open in your hamstrings. Like a vinyasa, like two, three, like kind of level class maybe. Virabhadrasana 1 is the warrior. And so they put the high lunge or crescent in there. Interesting, they put part. Okay, I see what they're doing. They're doing it because it's asymmetrical. Okay, so they're putting Parsvottanasana, pyramid pose, in there because the legs are what's considered asymmetrical, meaning they're in different planes in the satchel plane. They're different. The one's forward and one's back. Sarvita Chakranasana. I would actually categorize these slightly different, but we're just going to keep it like this. Parvita Ardha Chandrasana and Urdhva Prasarita Ekapada Padasana. Standing splits.
Nicole?
These are all warrior.
I would actually put these in twisting, some of them, like a twick, because Parvita means twisting. And so they don't have a twisting category here, so we'll just know that these are asymmetrical poses with twists.
Because they're also forward bends, right?
They're also,
is that a separate category as well?
Right. Okay. And so some people would put these also under forward bends because you're folding at your hips. Mm-hmm. Just know that, you know, people are categorizing them in different ways.
Combining them, now we have two.
But
categories.
Some of them are in two categories. Mm-hmm. Like at yoga, because my experiences at yoga were the tree pose, for example, is a standing balance pose, and in their language, they have neutral poses and external poses. Neutral poses mean your hips are neutral. External poses, something's external. But in tree, you're neutral on one side and you're external on the other. So this pose, for example, was in two categories. So I'll teach you about the rotation of the hips today, because that's really important in standing poses. Really, really important. So they would categorize it slightly different. It's okay. We'll sort it all out. And then Virabhadrasana 2 family, Virabha 2, Warrior 2, Revolved Warrior, some people call it Reverse Warrior. This has also Exalted Warrior. Uttita Parsvottanasana, which is extended side angle pose. We didn't actually do that today, but that's a very common one to link with Warrior 2 and triangle. And I'll tell you why later. Parvrita Parsvottanasana, that's actually a modified version of it. The full pose is actually with the heel down. And then Uttita Trikonasana is, they're putting that under the Warrior 2 family. I think why they're doing that, to be honest, is because oftentimes you'll see these poses linked together, and that's why they're putting them in a family. So they're calling it a family. Mm-hmm. It's the soul family of those poses.
Progression.
Yeah. So, right, because if you're, I don't know if any of you have ever been in some of these classes, but usually you'll see a lot of things linked together. It'll be like Warrior 2, and then they'll do triangle, and then they'll come out Warrior 2, and then you're in a side angle, and then you might step up into Ardha Chandrasana, and you might go back to triangle, and then you're back up to Warrior 2. Like, that would be a sequence, okay? They're all in the same family because they all have the same hip rotation, and they all are easy. The transition from one to the other is a simple step. Like, from Warrior 2 to triangle, I just straighten my leg. Nothing else changes, right? If I go from extended side angle to Parsvottanasana or to half moon, all I'm doing is literally stepping up that back leg. So nothing else has changed, right? So that's why they're considered same family. Mm-hmm. They're usually linked together. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If it's too much of a sidetrack.
No, okay, yeah.
So I'm just looking at the use of the word revolved for the warrior two.
Hi, Abby. Hi, Abby. I tried to sneak in.
Revolved on the warrior two, and then the revolved side angle. I'm just trying to
Between Revolved Warrior 2.
Or Exalted
because
Warrior.
Because you're turning into your body as opposed to the way for this book.
But I don't see, I'm not seeing, I want to understand that. Revolved Warrior 2.
Uh-huh, and what?
And Revolved Side Angle, Parivruta.
You want to know what?
Why the use of the word revolved?
Revolved, okay.
Because the back one feels more like a side stretch, and now I don't feel a twist in that so much.
Right. For some people, there will be a slight twist. So in Warrior 2, when we do the side bend, the action sometimes is to actually revolve the chest a little bit open. But I don't teach it that way because most people, when they come into this pose, if they do that, they end up in this weird back bend and the SI joint gets all funky. So I keep it as a side bend, it's a lateral side bend. When you're more advanced, the only thing that's revolving is your chest. That's it. It's not your hips. It's nothing down here. It's
so
just the chest.
This is the one where you specified, I think, that we're in the Tadasana hips front.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then, okay, so then you've got this going on and then it's the rotating towards.
Yeah, but what you're doing, and I'm going to teach this. This is not right for your hips in any of these poses.
Okay.
We never square our hips ever. Unless we're in Tadasana or something that's neutral.
Okay.
When we come into a pose like Warrior 2, we're in external rotation in the front leg. We're slightly in this internal revolve in the back leg. This back leg is Tadasana.
Right. Okay.
But the hips are a little bit in the transverse plane turned. Mm-hmm. It's not square. Because watch what would happen if I square my hips. And people used to do this. They used to say square your hips. Pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people started getting SI joint pain here. Mm-hmm. And they were jamming up their sacrum.
Okay.
So they took that out. There's no more of this squaring. Mm-hmm. It's a slight revolve. Mm-hmm. And this is lengthening down. Let me take this off. Okay, so this back leg is Tadasana, it's neutral, even though it's out, it's neutral. This left hip now is opening in external rotation, and I know this is hard, so I'll just keep reiterating it. And so there is a slight twist in the transverse plane, this is why it's good to know the planes. You're in reverse warrior, and the twist, the revolve, would come from the chest, and you'd open and look up at your hand. I teach it as a side bend for now, because most people, that's so much articulation, they just don't even get this yet.
Okay.
Right?
So, good.
So in advanced class, I might say now gaze towards the ceiling, which is such a deep stretch in your hips. Okay? So that's why. And then revolved, what
side
is
angle.
It? Side angle.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So side angle, you're here. Wait a second.
Side angle.
This is side angle pose for most people. Is this right? You guys know this pose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the full pose is eventually the fingertips go down towards the floor, and then the top arm comes up, and then over. That's the full pose. That most people can't get to there. They're here, right? And that's fine. That's how I teach it nowadays. And even here, you know, you were having Christine's little leg pain, you'd probably feel it here too. So for you, I would just do this. I'd do the crescent lunge twist, which is what it's called now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay? Okay. These are really big poses. So if you're not accustomed to doing them, right, these two would be connected a lot, Warrior 1 to a twist. That's what most people will call it now. Warrior 1, twist, right? Elbow outside the knee, lift your sternum. Right hip shaves back towards that left heel, lifting the sternum, drawing the belly in, you're twisting. And then if you're in advanced class, you might say, and now you can put your hand down towards the ground outside your ankle and lift your top arm up. That'll be like phase 1, and then phase 2.
How would somebody know the difference, like on a schedule between a beginner class and an advanced class and an intermediate class?
Here, just kind of in general, you know.
They have levels, in LA they have levels, I don't know about here. say,
but I never saw anything that I was like, oh, I can't do that because the owl is labeled, you know?
I know. It needs to be more specific, maybe.
Actually, there's not much of a pool, so then everything's kind of open to everybody.
I guess you general level.
Level becomes
and then I kind of see
who can do what.
Yeah.
On the yoga center's like descriptions, they usually say like open to all levels, or sometimes it will say like there was a Kundalini class was on Saturdays that said it was only like advanced.
Advanced, so I didn't go to that one.
Yeah.
I generally teach to all levels just because I can, right? So if people come in, I can adjust.
Right. Well, then you have to have like this conversation about what is, because people have different perceptions about what's advanced.
Yeah.
Right.
And
of course.
So if there was some guidelines to be like, if you can do this, then you might be advanced.
It's just so different by every class and by every teacher.
Yeah.
And like what their knowledge base is and what the student's knowledge base is, it can be difficult. To do.
Well, especially if they don't know the terminology, also.
Right.
Yes. Well, I can do this.
Right. I know.
That's what's interesting about not having a school, right? Like some of the older ways we talk about, I think it's more school oriented where you come up through so everyone's progressing with
the
same
progression.
Yeah.
And that is how it used to be. So anyone could enter, but they'd start at the beginning with one pose and then they'd go to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Sequential. Now, it is different. I don't really have a solution for you right now.
That's okay.
But she's right, like about the market. You know, this market is not an advanced market.
Yeah.
Like it's just not. People don't care about that stuff. And that's great. Who cares? You know, it's like they don't want to do that.
Right.
Well, Roslyn used to be pretty intermediate to advanced classes.
Yeah.
But when they were over there, but I haven't been to them since they're there. I don't know what's.
Yeah,
I haven't been to it since they moved.
You can probably tell when you put someone in a pose, like if they know what they're doing, or already know their limitations and they're doing their corrections, and you probably know that person's
been
doing
it. Yeah, I can tell the beginning of the class.
Yeah.
And now, you know, like even looking at people's down dogs or looking at their chaturangas, I know where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Or even their breath control.
Uh-huh.
So you like make offerings, like if you can, do this.
You can use a block or you can skip it. Like I just give people permission to do what they need to do. Yeah, I'm not militant.
Yeah.
I used to be.
Except to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
You must
do this now.
Well, that was a helpful explanation. I appreciate you thinking of that because it feels like it gives the inner understanding of what's happening.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of like, I would like them to have a twisting family here, maybe. So Pargrita means twisting and revolving. And so a lot of those poses would go under that kind of a category. And so if you want to recategorize those, like for me, I learned just what kind of paired well together. You know, because in Vinyasa, you get to create your sequences. So you go in and out, you need to know, like, I wouldn't start here and then just like stand up. I would transition you to the, like how I transitioned you this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got you standing up, but it took about 10, 15 minutes to get there. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're lying on your back, and you're on hands and knees, and you're in planks, and you're in down dogs, and it's like a prep to the sun salutes, then we're on half sun salutes, then we're in sun aids. So I like really, you know, built you up to that, and then went to standing. So warming up is important, because if you know, especially as we age, I'm putting myself in that category, we can really tweak things pretty quickly and easily. So, all right. Body parts, nature. We're going to skip from what page number she had. We went from 116 to 117 to 118 to 119 to 120. To 121, 122.
And then the next blank page, I didn't number.
Okay. So 124, I guess, would be this one. More categories. So this is interesting.
123.
Okay. Well, so now I'm going to screw up the whole
thing. If it has anything on it, I numbered it.
Okay.
Except the orange pages, but if it's blank, I didn't number
it.
So you get number on the orange pages?
No.
Do you number on this page? Okay, only pages of that.
Yeah.
So this would be one.
So they added more categories. Okay, so here's some more categories. Lateral side bending. So they're showing you Pavrita Janushrasana. Pavrita again revolved because her chest is revolving towards the ceiling.
Can you say what it is again?
Pavrita Janushrasana. It's seated tree but with a revolve.
So how do you spell
Janus?
Also, Jatara Parivartanasana. Jatara Parivartanasana is this. It's like the arms are out to the sides in a T, and you rotate your legs over towards your hand. And the back. You have to have a lot of core strength to do this though, because it's quite difficult for your back. And then the variation, the modification is bend knees. Tabletop in the legs and rotating like this. That feels better for me on the spine and my back. So I'm just showing you some of these so you know what they are. Okay. Jatara Parivartanasana, which is actually, if you go to the next page, it says sample poses, core strengthening, Vasana, Jatara Parivartanasana. I know these names are really long. Trust me, you don't have to know all this stuff now. You'll eventually maybe know it. I got really into Sanskrit for a while, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, all these weird long names. Jatara Parivartanasana. There's one called Triambuka Kapala Paschimottanasana.
Bless you.
I was like, yeah, God bless you.
Bless you.
And so core is good for what? I mean, it protects your back, right?
Yeah.
Big time.
Yep. Your hip flexors.
Yeah.
Overuse the hip flexors.
If you overuse your hip flexors.
Yes.
Yeah. So good, right? Like Navasana, if your core weren't super strong, your hips are still flexing, but people rely on their hip flexors to do their core work, so this is getting really tight. So if you can relax the inner thighs, like literally feel like you're almost rolling them down, but release the hip flexors, and then you're more in your core. So that's important for things like this, like leg lowers and lifts, this is hip flexion, it is working your hip flexors, but you need to work the core muscles, the transverse abdominis muscles, which wrap around the pelvis and they're like the corset for your spine. That's where you get into like really using the core and trying not to overuse the hip flexors. Uh-huh. And that applies to some of these poses. Okay.
Also teaches you not to depend too much on your external muscles, smaller muscle groups.
Yeah. What else does it say here about core? When so overdeveloped and tight, the rectus abdominis muscle is a source of tension and spinal problems, right? Okay. All right. We'll talk about core. We'll do a lot more core on the back bending weekend because it pairs really well with back bends. And twists also pair really well with back bends because it helps to open up the thoracic spine. You guys know the names of the spine? Am I talking gibberish? Okay, so you've got the lower spine, right? And that's the L5 through the L1. And then you have like the sacrum, which is the fused vertebra, right? Your tailbone. And then you get to the thoracic spine, 12, D12, right? Mm-hmm. You can always correct me in my anatomy. And then the cervical spine. And it's that S curve, right?
I always remember it in your cervical spine, you have 7, mm-hmm. and in your lumbar, you have 5, and that equals 12.
It's so symmetrical.
There's so many like little tricks to keep, because you think, how can I remember all of this? There's just so many little tricks.
That's a great trick, Thank you. So, only because I'm saying thoracic, I'm saying lumbar, if you guys don't know the names of this, but so cervical spine, thoracic spine, lumbar, just to keep it simple. Okay. Asymmetrical poses. Now here, they're saying sample poses, Marichyasana, Ardha Matsyasana, Uttita Trikonasana, Ardha Chandrasana. Okay. So when your legs are in different planes, when body parts are in different planes, then it's asymmetrical. Symmetrical is Tadasana. Asymmetrical, like the legs have moved or the arms have moved. Okay. It's saying general effects of asymmetrical to demonstrate strength and flexibility, balancing. Balancing poses are asymmetrical. Standing asanas. So let's go over some of these standing asanas. It says, while some poses may fit into more than one category, the purpose of this section is to provide a summary about the standing poses as a whole category. Form. Build the foundation first. So I talked about this yesterday, right? It's like building a house. In general, we want to really work with strength, right? For most people, and flexibility. Strength and flexibility. To open up the hip flexors, usually, which is one that limits a lot of the pelvic mobility. That's this guy's opinion. Root to rise. It's often advised to teach standing poses from the ground up, which aims to develop a strong, steady foundation upon which to build your practice. Avoid focusing just on the upper body alignment. I would say you can, totally, if you're doing that as a theme. But generally, we're building from the ground up. It says avoid focusing on the upper body alignment, pose refinement or deepening until the foundation is properly aligned. So get the foundation correct. Get the asana in the proper foundation. Foundation is what's really touching the floor, right? So when you're teaching, when you stepped out, right, let's say today, when you're setting up for prasarita and had to take your arms out, your legs or your feet are parallel, right? Your feet are parallel, the toes are pointing forward, they're aligned under the wrists. So that's the general foundation, because I'm talking about the feet. The feet are the only thing touching the floor. So I focus there. And then I can build from the ankles, from the outer hips, lift the front of the pelvis, soften the front ribs, elongate through the torso, widen your collarbones. But I don't say all that stuff until I have the feet firmly planted. Because remember, if we're in a pose and the feet aren't in the right position, like I said, let's say I was doing that, ow, triangle, that's gonna hurt a lot. So I gotta make sure that I'm talking about the feet. So I had to bend the knee, turn from deep within the hip socket, rotate the leg to 90 degrees, back toes turn in, or heel turns out, depending on how you want to say it. That's the foundation of the triangle. Now, I can start to talk about triangle. You know, bend your outer ankles, lift the kneecaps, lift the front of the pelvis, whatever I want to say, until I get to the top. And then, I pull you into the pose. Get the foundation first, some alignment points, exhale, reach the right hip towards the left hip, or you want to say is reach your right arm forward, lengthen the side of the waist, and then you hinge. Then, now, there's other stuff going on. Now I'm in the pose. I gotta teach the pose once you're in it. So I might start at the ground, or I might focus on another body part area. I could always reinforce the feet. And then I have to get you out of it. So when we write sequences, at least in yoga works, we wrote sequences, maybe I'll give you something like that. Then I gotta get them out. So you taught them the foundation, you taught some points, you get them in the pose. Now, find your feet, slight bend in that right knee, use your top hand, pull you up. And rotate that right leg back to neutral. So I have to teach that too. So when you first start teaching, it's good to get in your body and do the pose and figure out how would I teach this thing? Because it's got several layers to the script, you know? Beginning, set up, foundation, some cues, then get them in the pose, teach the pose, and then get them out. You know, when you're a beginner, as a teacher, you might just be like, really simple. You might say one or two or three things. As you get more advanced, if you decide to do like the more alignment-based kind of things, you're going to get more detail. You're just going to keep getting more detail. Okay.
And the same when you're in quadruped stance, right? If your hands are on the ground, they are foundations.
Yes.
That root to rise starts from.
Yes, exactly. Hand, you know, be really specific. It's not just hands on the floor. It's hands are shoulder distance apart, right? The wrists are under the shoulders. That's still part of the setup. Because if I didn't say that, if you're a beginner, hands on the floor could mean this, right? Yeah. And so you have to be really specific. And you'll see when you start teaching how specific you need to be. And the knees are not here, are they? No, my knees are under my hip points, and they're hip distance apart. And my feet are in line with my knees. That's all part of the foundation. Now, when you get into an upper level class, people don't want to hear any of that bullshit. They're like, no, this, I just want to, I know the notes, thank you. So this is the, in the beginning, right, when people don't know. And then eventually you could say hands and knees go, and people will know what this means. And then you can start to articulate maybe other things, like, oh, I'm going to teach the pelvis today. So if I'm going to teach the pelvis, I'll talk about the pelvis. As you tilt your pelvis forward anteriorly, arch your upper middle back, and try not to dip too much into your lower back or something like that, you know. And then as you come into the cat position, you're going to come into posterior tilt and round your lower spine and bring your chin and tilt your chest. So that I just focused on this area. I could focus on the upper body. This is a good pose to focus on different areas of the body. If I did a shoulder opening class, I'd talk about the arms. Now round down through your index finger and thumb. Firm your outer triceps in. Widen your collarbones, lift your chest, and arch in your upper spine. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and then you could do the opposite. So you can start to really get detailed by areas of the body depending on where you're going. Mm-hmm. The blueprint. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what's on the floor first? It's the first thing, that's the foundation. The foundation. Root to rise is great because what this means is to, it's working with gravity. The more you root down into the floor, the more energy rebounds up the body, or rises up the body. Just like if I were to, this is not a ball, but if I were to, and that was supposed to go up. Bouncing a ball, the harder you hit the ball into the floor, the higher it's gonna go up into the air. We're doing that in yoga. That's called root to rise. When I'm coming up, a lot of people say it when they're coming up in, you know, this pose, root to rise. Rooting down through your feet to rise up through your body. If I'm sinking, I'm not rising. The more I press down, the more lift I get in my spine. So good, right? Lateralness. Alright. So that's the root to rise concept. We use that in standing asanas a lot. Let's see what this says here. Function. The legs are the workhorses of the body. I love that because I believe that too. They support, they stabilize, and they propel you with vitality. It means your feet are a beautifully intricate, complex, and responsive system. And when your legs and feet aren't taken through their natural range of motion, they become stagnant and dull. Feet are usually touching the floor, obviously, in standing poses, right? So the feet is what you're always looking at. The feet are so interesting. The feet can supinate, which means people roll to the outer edges of their feet. Did you guys do this with Tadasana? No?
Maybe so, Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
You may not remember, so I'll just go over it. So supination means, I think of like giving soup. Soup is, somebody gave it to me. So soup is like, it's opening, like that's supinating. Pronation is more this, collapsed arches. There's things that are functional and structural. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. The feet have a lot to do with those things. So if I collapse my inner arches of my feet, I can look like I'm not knee. But it's actually, this is only a functional thing for me. Like if I actually stood on my feet, I'm not knock knee. But some people actually, no matter what you do with their feet, they still look like that. Right? So that would be structural. People who are bow-legged, it's usually structural, but I could kind of make myself a little bit bow-legged if I roll to the outer edges of my legs, let's say. But it's functional right now. If I'm really standing on my feet, I'm pretty neutral. Right? I used to have collapsed arches. I used to do this. I just didn't even know I had arches inside my feet. I was like, what are you talking about? And then I had to practice, and they'd be like, what are you doing? Your legs. I'm like, I don't know what. Yeah. So I would stand at the stop signs and anywhere where there was like somewhere where I crossed the road and I would practice my arches. I'd lift my inner arches and I'd pick up my knees and I'd work my outer hips and I'd lift my toes and I'd spread my toes and I'd do this for a while. And now I can't even do the other. I don't know how to do it. I mean, I can show it to you, but it really doesn't feel good on my body. So these are just postural things that you get to learn in yoga. How to stand on your feet. There's an arch in the inner foot. There's an arch in the outer foot. And so these are like bridges. If you're on the ball mounds of your feet and you lift your toes, they automatically lift up. Let's look at people's feet for a second. It's kind of fun. Come in and show us your feet. And we'll see who's like kind of pronated. And after I teach it, everyone's like perfect, but we'll see. Some people have flat feet that are really flat, and that would affect their knees. And you can start to look at these things in your practice. Let's see if everybody has flat feet. Your feet are a little bit flat on the outer arch. Here. Pick up your toes. See how she just turned down her arch? And push your toes down. See how they're kind of flat here? And now lift your toes. And now they pick up. But that could affect her knee and her outer hip at some point. But she's a conscious yogi, so she's going to know. Everybody in here actually has really pretty neutral legs. Like, I don't see any bow-legged people.
I feel like I may be bow-legged.
Let's see. I've been
practicing. Sorry, because we got to see your knees to see, really.
But when they do, they go like this. They fall out.
So you kind of actually hyperextend your joint. Let's see. So,
so I've been practicing.
Do what you normally do.
It's hard because I'm practicing not.
Yeah, right. So you can tell when people hyperextend. I mean, it's not that bad, is it? But usually what happens when people hyperextend their knees is they puff out the back of the knee joint.
Mine don't, but they are hyperextended. They would,
they're a little bit hyperextended. They're a little bit, but not too much.
Way longer.
So for her, she practices bending. Bend your knees a little bit. Yeah, just gives herself a little bit like room. Yeah,
just down. Yeah. So I've been trying to like micro bend everything.
And so when you're in a pose like, Tadasana, that would affect, right? Or if we're collapsed, it's going to affect our knees, it's going to affect our hips. So you can have people really practice lifting their toes, which activates and lifts the quadricep muscles, firms their outer hips in, gives them that nice stable leg. So when they go into their tree poses, they're stable. They're not like, you know, because this would be hard, right? Collapsing on the inner arch. So that's why we work to firm all those muscles in. Yeah? So you're firming your outer ankles, you're firming and lifting your arches of your feet. Bridges. Have you seen happy yoga?
I thought I had like tree down like a month or two into yoga and I was so excited. And then I was in like Natalie's class and she's like, get out of your hip. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, you're down in your hip.
You were sitting like this.
I walked into my hip and I'm like, oh, this is cool. And she's like, don't do that.
Yeah, like lock the joint.
Yeah, you didn't even know I was doing it.
Yeah.
I do it with everything.
Yeah, so if you're locking your joints, then you're less mobile and you're not using your muscles.
Yeah.
So the idea is to stack your bones. Stack your bones. If your bones are stacked, your muscles don't have to effort as much. Mm-hmm. It's actually more useful to stack the bones. That's why I talk about symmetry and alignment so much. It's because it actually leads to a more effort, less yoga practice. More breath, more ease, more fun. More energy, right? Yeah.
So that's what somebody would do to rebuild their arches is just to lift their toes.
Practice like standing on their toe tips, things like that. Even going up against a wall, you can stand with your heels up against the wall, things like that. And you can practice in the other direction too, right? Practice these and just kind of stretching the bottom of the feet. Because sometimes I think too, it's like the bottom of the feet are really stiff, because they're like weird shoes or whatever. So yeah.
My boyfriend literally has such flat feet that when he walks on, hard surfaces, it suctions up.
Wow! Those noises.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little reptile.
Like a caveman.
He's a caveman. Awesome. All right. Yeah.
This is pronation.
Yeah.
Right? This is last
like
stretch.
Like that.
Yeah.
Is that the line?
Mm-hmm.
Nicole, can you talk about what's going on here? Like, if you're feeling pain there, like, I want to just do that. I just want to point them all the time, but that's not an arch thing, is it?
You want to point them all to, so you
this
have...
This feels good to me. Uh-huh. There's a tightness here that's like getting worse.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you are a little flat-footed right mm-hmm. there.
So is that another symptom possibly?
It could be, yeah. Can you lift your toes and see what happens? Do you feel it there?
It feels better when I do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what's probably happening.
Okay.
Because the arches are starting to collapse.
Okay.
It happens over time, mm-hmm. naturally, in our bodies, unless we are aware of it and okay. work the muscles just like any other muscle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I would do that. I would stand like that whenever you're standing around. Just be like, oh, I'm just going to lift my toes and work my arches. I fixed it, you know, yeah. in my body. So I know it's possible.
Does the picking up the towel thing with the feet, does that help?
Probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people do those foot, toe separator things, okay. too. I think those help sometimes, too.
I always heard that, but I didn't know what it does.
Are they comfortable, those toe separator
things? I don't really use them, to be honest. I just, you know, now it's like, eventually your your feet become like hands, you know, it's really weird. Just practice. Mm-hmm. Good. And I don't know, I was a high heel wearer for a long time, and that really affected my feet in a really negative way.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what
that
you
did.
I switched my shoe more to a zero drop heel. Hiking shoe. I wear
yeah.
it everywhere.
That's a big deal, yeah. Those are great, by the way. I love those. When the heel is lower than the top of your foot,
What's the name of the shoe?
This one's called Zero Drop. That's the brand name.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's where they don't have a lift in your heel.
Right.
My back, like in the first day, I was like,
yeah.
Oh,
it's
my
so God. Much different. Yeah, because it drops your pelvis in a different position.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So awesome. I had this for a while.
It's like walking barefoot.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing is being barefoot.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Yeah. Be barefoot. So let's see. So physical, what do you think the physical effects of standing asanas would be? We talked about this probably yesterday with the sun salutations, right? Heat building.
Circulation.
Yeah. Circulation, heat building, muscular stability, strength, right? Yeah.
Alignment.
Huh?
Alignment.
Alignment. Warms up the body. These are big muscle groups, these poses. So it's easier to do those first. For a lot of people, in terms of all the other categories of poses, because they are the big muscle groups that need to be warmed up, the legs. Very grounding to be in your legs, trying to focus on the feet. Okay? Brings alignment awareness, yes, we said that. They're good poses to teach, they're good poses to teach the imprints for other poses. Sorry. I just had to get a little nuts in there. Energetic effects, feeling grounded and stable, emotionally centering, establishing connection to the earth, awakening the root chakra, strengthening the lower energy centers, stimulating the central nervous system, increasing your alertness and your focus. Confidence, like that confidence from standing on your own 2 feet. Standing poses are generally sequenced early in class to increase circulation, build heat, and prepare the body. Poses are of this category are excellent entry points to body awareness. They bring attention to the Anumanya Kosha. I actually talked about that Kosha earlier this morning. Mm-hmm. The outermost physical layer of your being. They can transition the body from the external to the internal experience. They're a great place to start for those coming from an active day. From a period of prolonged sitting, right? Yeah, that's a good point, because we're sitting all day. Standing up is going to feel like a nice counter pose to sitting all day. So it gives you the 6 movements of the spine. It does have internal and external implication here, but. So. My legs here are not rotated. They're just neutral, right? Tadasana, they're still neutral. I just stepped out to the side, but I didn't rotate anything in my hips. I just opened my legs. When I go into Warrior Two, I externally rotate that front leg out 90 degrees. the reason why we turn that back leg slightly, the foot and the leg, is because this didn't feel good on people squaring the hips. So we do a slight internal rotation of the back leg. And this is called an externally rotated hip pose. Warrior two, triangle, Parshvakonasana, side angle, Ardha Chandrasana, half moon. They're all in external rotation in the front leg. And the back leg is all Tadasana leg. Okay? Does that make sense? Somewhat? Don't worry, you're learning it all. So just kind of giving me brief overviews. An internally rotated leg, what they're calling internal rotation, is not, it's a weird term to say. I'd rather just call it a neutral leg. But the reason why I'm calling it internal is because it's a neutral leg, and there's a slight action of inner thighs rolling down, let's say, in chair pose. Or in Garudasana. Garudasana is rolling the inner thighs in to get into this pose. Okay? There's not a lot of those poses in yoga. So just think for now, just so you're not too confused. You're either neutral, or one leg is externally rotated. Those are some of the poses that you can do. This is neutral, right? Am I neutral in my right leg? Yeah, neutral. External, rotated the hip. Okay, that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Symmetry and asymmetry. This is another terms, okay? Many standing postures are asymmetrical, meaning that one leg is positioned with alignment that differs from the other. Tree pose is a good example. This typically results in one hip being internally rotated and one hip being externally rotated, which constrain the SI joints. Below are some guidelines for this. Do not teach too many asymmetrical poses on one side because it can stress the SI joint. Do not insist on keeping the legs straight and standing forward bends. It creates stress in the sacrum. I'm going to skip over that. I don't want to get you guys too confused. So, if you go to the next page, sample poses. Warrior one is asymmetrical. Just meaning that the legs are in different planes. Sad shape. Triangle pose, the legs are asymmetrical. They're not together. Parshvakonasana, they're asymmetrical. They're not together. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure that you understand that. So let's go over some of these poses. Yeah? How about what we do is we, let's all go into warrior two. And I will teach it from the wide-legged stance, which is what we did earlier, where your legs are out, you're facing the side wall, your feet are parallel. Bring your arms out to the sides. So foundation, feet are parallel. You're about 3 to 4 feet. Some people will say one leg's distance, 3 to 4 feet or one leg's distance. Because remember, the feet are parallel, but how wide are they? You say all those things, or you could use the arms as that measurement. So having the ankles underneath the wrists is one other way of saying it. Okay. From deep within your left hip socket, you start on the left side. I'll start it this way. Actually, I'll do it differently. flat toes in. So again, we're foundation still. Bend the knee to 90 degrees. Okay? So now I gave you the foundation of the pose. Now you'll want to teach the pose, and depending on what you're doing and what your theme is, you might teach it differently. Yeah, some of you with the arm stuff going on, just drop your arms, it's fine. Okay? So if I'm working from the ground up, I'm going to look at the feet knee angle. So I might say something like, lift the inner arch of your back foot. Firm your outer left, I'm sorry, that's your right foot, your right foot. Firm your left ankle in and up. Lengthen your left inner groin. Firm your left outer hip in. Press your left thigh bone back. I'm just going to start working up the body. Pick up the front of your pelvis, right? Or lift it up off of the left thigh. Sides of the waist elongated. Chest open. If you know the blueprints of Tadasana, you could teach Tadasana in this pose. Arms are still up. And so what I'm looking for in the pose is the spine. I think Natalie teaches this way too. It's like, you're always looking at what the central nervous system is doing. Because if you're protecting that, then the rest is superfluous. I mean, it's important, but it's not as important as what the spine is doing. So if someone's like this, their spine is not in alignment, right? If someone's like this, their spine is not in alignment. So I'm gonna work their feet and their legs before I do anything, because that's supporting their spine. Straighten that front leg, turn the heel. Does that make sense? Okay, arms out. Bend your right knee. Rotate from deep within your hip socket. That's external rotation. Point your toes straight forward. Turn your back toes slightly in. Bend your right knee to 90 degrees. Good. So now what you'll see in a lot of poses is this, like I was saying. So reach through your back arm to bring your shoulders over your pelvis. Could be an explanation or a cue. So I'm just giving you different options for cueing so you can understand what we're doing with the hips. Grounding down through the feet. Lift the toes can be an action. Find the arches in your feet. See how that turns on the pose. External rotation, one of the common things to say would be to lengthen the right inner groin and firm the outer hip. You're always firming the outer hip in these external poses. And then straighten the leg.
Firming the outer hip.
Turn, yeah. So I'll show you what I mean. So let's pick somebody. Let's pick a body. Who wants to be the body? You want to be the body? Just for kicks? You're going to do, I'm going to give you a word too that looks weird so that we can fix it.
Okay.
And I don't want you to hurt your body.
No, I don't either.
But I know your body awareness. So all you need to do is, when you're in warrior two, stick out your booty a little bit outside of what you think is normal.
And we've just been doing warrior two. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's going to turn, let's start with the whatever leg you want to. Yeah, so she's turning her leg out, she's coming into her pose, she'll bend her front knee.
Yeah,
I see this all the time. So I don't want her over her leg, but what I want you to see is external rotation. You'll see that a lot if you're tightening your hip. So a common thing to say is lengthen your inner groin towards your knee and firm your outer hip in. And see what that does to her body? Now, for some people, if I adjust that, the knee will bend, and I'll say press the left thigh bone back. That's considered a counteraction. So that's it. So that's the, and you can come out of the pose. That's the emergency. It's the knee. The risk factor of a pose like that, warrior two, is the knee, because it's bent. So I'm going to look at the knee first. The knee could be how it was. If her hip was jutting out and she's tight, the knee was rolling in. That's bad for her knee. So, firm the outer hip, lengthen the front of the knee, or lengthen the inner knee, and she fixes it, right?
And then here, too.
And then, yeah.
Right. Released here, yeah. In order to...
Right. And you'll see that booty thing. So, pick up the front of the pelvis, and she fixes it, okay? Now, some people, the knee might go way past the ankle. I see that sometimes. I'm like, and I just come over here, and I just do that, because it's just easier. Because it's not like everybody's doing that. But if I say ankle on top of the, or I'm sorry, knee on top of the ankle, some people actually, you know, go past. And I'll just say, I'll back them. I'll be like, press your shin bone back. Okay, I might not adjust it with my hands. I might just say, can you press your shin bone back? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. Or can you move your knee back so it's over your ankle? Generally, when you're adjusting, you don't want to touch their joints. You want to give them the understanding of what's above and below the joint so that they can actually find the muscles themselves. Yeah, make yourself even be the other side.
Firming the outer hip, lengthen the sit.
It's hard to grasp that as if not knowing.
Yeah, firm the outer hip, draw the left sit bone down, that's another way you can say it. Or you could say lengthen the inner knee and lengthen back through the outer hip. So there's lots of different ways that you can cue it. But that's the idea, is to get the knee over the ankle. Okay? Now the other thing, I know you can do this, I don't really want you to, but she can square her hips because maybe she did that at one point in her life, that square. But look, it looks to me a little awkward because this is the rotation that we were talking about. We want this outer hip to be slightly rotated forward.
And it's way too much stress.
It's a lot of stress on your inner hips to do it the other way.
What about the foot? Where foot, is that a good position for her foot and her anatomy? Or
that's, that's fine. Some people slightly turned in, some people you'll see it kind of parallel. As long as they're not, so I see this in their pants. There's like this indent that happens when they square their hips. I actually want to see it after rotated so it's smooth. The yoga pants are helpful because you can look at the wrinkles in people's pants and then you'll know. You'll be like, oh, look at that. But the other way, there's an indent. And you don't want to see an indent on both sides. This back leg is Tadasana. This front leg is the only place where you want to see that indent. That's how you kind of know. Cheap way of knowing what's the proper rotation of the hips.
So I've been injured 2.5 times by a yoga instructor adjusting me with their hands twice really badly, like long-term hip injury. And so just like when you were talking about the knee, for me what feels safer rather than this is saying gently move your hand towards my knee. So they're doing the action and they know where their body is.
Because we've actually pushed you.
Well, this wasn't the pose where it happened.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Just in general,
that's
my cautionary thing.
Yeah, and of energy lines, like energy lines is a big thing to look at in poses. This is called the horseshoe. So the knee, the inner thigh is going forward, it wraps around the knee, and it goes back to the outer hip. That's the energy line of the pose. Okay, that's warrior two. Triangle pose is similar. We can look at another body. Maybe Elisa, do you want to look at your body? Let's look at your body in triangle pose. And again, if I call on you and you're like, no way, just don't do it. It's okay. It's good to see bodies and just kind of see different bodies. Okay, so we'll have her legs be feet parallel, about 3 to 4 feet. Or you could say one leg's distance, or ankles underneath the wrist. I'm just going to keep repeating some of these things. So bend your left knee from deep within your hip socket. Rotate your leg out to 90 degrees so the toes point forward. Turn your back toes slightly in. Good.
All right, I have to go wider.
Okay. So some people, and I'll talk about the stance in a moment. Okay. That's actually not good for your body.
Oh,
what are you doing? So don't do it. And I'll tell you why in a second, okay? So heel to heel or heel to arch, but not wider than heel to heel, because that's actually not your spine in alignment. So something's going on probably in your hips, but we'll talk about that, okay? All right. So from here, hinge at your left hip, reach your left arm forward, get the left side waist really long. Just keep going in, go like that. Good. Now lower your hand down to wherever it lands. So for her, I gave her a block to support. And the block goes outside the ankle. Why? Because it keeps your spine in alignment. Okay? So she's doing a really, really nice triangle pose. This action of the leg that we just talked about, the inner thigh is rotating forward, the outer hip is revolving back and firming in. Okay? It's the same as warrior two. All right? Just just a gentle rotation. So that, for me, is in line with the second and third toe. It's that same thing again. This looks really good. See this? I call this the snow cone. She's in a lateral side bend. She just fixed it. But depressing the top ribs in so the bottom ribs elongate. It's just a simple, tiny adjustment. Everything else looks really good. And then place your hand on your hip. Bend your left knee slightly and come up. Nope, slowly.
Intense.
Yeah. All right, bring this leg back to neutral so the toes point forward. Good, we'll do the other side so you're even. So slight bend in the right knee. That's just to enable, when you bend the joints, just like you did with your arms, you can access the muscles. So bending the right knee a little bit, rotating from the inner thigh, her foot will point forward, okay? Arms out to the sides in a T. Lift the front of your pelvis up. Yeah, so you're in neutral, neutral spine, Tadasana. And now, as you exhale, hinge from your right hip, reach forward, lengthen, 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 yeah, to the sides of the waist. And now place your hand down on the block. Hand is under shoulder. This looks good. And she already understood this, or understands that on the other side. You don't want to see big rounding. That would mean she's in a lateral side bend. She's bending from her hip, so both sides of her torso are even in Tadasana. And she could even, there you go. Sometimes I can gumby people a little bit. All right, that looks good.
Otherwise, if they aren't able to make that tiny adjustment, would you just have her come up on her fingertips or have the block
higher? Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. I just know she can do it in her body. Yeah. So bend the right knee and use your belly and then come on up. Use your top arm to pull you up. Yeah, good. Straighten the leg, turn it in, and pause. You can bring your feet together. So I just wanted you to see that because I knew she did the snow cone effect on her spine, that lateral bend. And so I just wanted you to see that you're in Tadasana. You're looking at the tailbone going all the way up to the crown, nice and even. Okay? Feet were in the right position. So now, here's the thing. So when you're coming into these external poses and your feet are neutral like this and you're doing this, right, your heel-to-heel alignment when you come in from this position. When you're teaching a flow class, people come into this pose a lot like this. They turn the back heel down. I have people go heel to back arch. It's easier in this transition to come up heel to arch, actually. I'm not a huge stickler for it because it's okay for heel to heel as well, but a lot of teachers get really particular that they want you to be in heel to arch alignment in Warrior II. But classically, if you're coming from this pose, right, it ends up naturally in heel-to-heel alignment. Right. Mm-hmm. But some people will say all externally hip-rotated open poses are heel-to-arch. Mm-hmm. That's it. Okay, fine. But not what you were doing, which is heel. You were like heel. No, you were this way. Overlapping heels? Something to that.
No.
She's right. 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 Yeah.
Someone told me to take a wider stance.
Railroad tracks.
I don't know who.
That's different. And the placement of the foot.
So you were not heel to heel, but you were over here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really hard on your SI joint.
That's good to know.
Something I noticed was that you seem to have a lot of external rotation on whatever leg that was, the left
for
leg,
the left
I think.
Leg?
And it seemed like maybe I was wondering if that was an adjustment for that. Not that it's right.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe. Yeah.
They externally rotate really far.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
I have to stop.
Yeah.
Maybe. But to really get you to come in, to like firm you in, is what I'm feeling like. How do we contain her a little bit?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What about the pelvis? If now's not the time to just curious, wondering if the way you said that you know I'm capable of squaring and that's old style cueing, like what for the triangle pose is healthy?
To keep a neutral pelvis. Neutral pelvis, so you might say something like if they were dipping like forward like this, bring the pubic bone up or bring the front of the pelvis up, or you can do it from the back, lengthen the sit bones down, lengthen the tailbone down.
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways that you can cue either the front of the pelvis or the back of the pelvis.
So the idea
is to get it to neutral.
So you are trying to kind of draw it into the center of the line of those legs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so when you start making an energy line, which is why I like teaching an energy line, you can tell, like, The spine isn't really looking like it's in its proper energy line right
it's
now.
It's broken.
It's broken somehow. And so some of you may not understand that yet, but some of you might. And so if you could think of like arrows in your head, you know, it's like, oh, that arrow's going that way, that arrow's going that way, this one's going this way. Okay, something's off kilter. And then it's like, don't always, the pelvis is a very hard thing to adjust. Mm-hmm. So the effect of the pelvis is the outcome, I'll say, of the legs and the feet. If you can adjust the pelvis pretty much in any direction by just introducing the legs and awareness around the legs. Does that make sense? So if I'm in warrior two and I am going like this, which I was doing with her, firming the outer hip in, or dropping the right sit bone, or dropping the tailbone, will affect, and it has to do with the legs too, will affect the pelvis. What's below the pelvis is the legs. So start with the ground up first, and then after you teach the legs, if you still see something funky in the pelvis, then an instruction like, can you lift the pit of your abdomen up? That's going to affect the pelvis. Mm-hmm. Can you lift the front of your pelvis up? Can you create more length in the sides of your waist? You know, some simple actions could affect this pelvis. I don't generally tend to touch people's pelvises because it's a sensitive area. Mm-hmm. Unless I know them, I'm like, I'm going to pick up the front of your pelvis. Or I'm going to drop your tailbone, and I'll just indicate. I'll just be like, drop your tailbone down. You know, just a simple action. But pelvises, you know, because the legs and the feet are in different positions, you don't want to start cranking on people's pelvises. It's going to hurt them, okay? Don't touch it unless you've already fixed feet, legs. Then, you know, modify. You can use your voice. You can just indicate, a little simple indication, okay? Mm-hmm. Pick them up.
That's true. When you did the leg adjustment on me, it created space for me to adjust the pelvis.
Yeah, right, yeah. Because the hip flexors are what's doing these kinds of actions. So if you can open the hip flexors, it's going to affect the pelvis.
And if you're walking them into the pose from the feet up, then chances are either you forgot a step or they missed
something.
Probably.
If you see something really weird going on the pelvis, then something's probably wrong on the floor.
Yeah.
Or, and I hate using right and wrong, but it's like, it's not in the proper position.
Can injure themselves.
Yeah, it can injure the SI joint, the sacrum, right?
Knees,
yeah. So knees are definitely something to look at. And pelvis, okay? Again, we're looking for Tadasana in these poses, okay? So warrior two, triangle, Ardha Chandrasana. Ardha Chandrasana is a fun one to practice against the wall. Do you guys want to do that really quickly?
Sure.
That's the half moon pose. So I'll give you guys the opportunity to, and I'll just show you what we're going to do. It's actually fun to know your spine, because if you come into a triangle pose and a warrior two pose against the wall, let's say we're here, heels are against the wall, spine straight. I turn my back toes in, I'm deep within the hip socket rotating, and I bend my knee, I can actually feel myself wanting to, you know, do something with my pelvis. I gotta like really find my Tadasana. I'll straighten the front leg, do my triangle. When I first started doing triangle, I was like way out here, like I could really feel where my spine went out of alignment. And I can still feel the parts of me that are like falling over because my hip's not in. Mm-hmm. So when you do this, have a block nearby because you might fall if your hip's jutting out a lot. And you can, obviously we can't put it outside because we're against the wall. And you can practice your triangle pose against the wall to feel how elongated your spine is and if your hip's in. And then, it's going to be hard to actually practice this without being a little bit away from the wall. Because we have a block too. I'm like going to hit the wall here. You can come into it. Block underneath there. Yeah.
That's Ardha Chandrasana.
This is half moon pose against the wall. This is hard. It's really hard. I mean, this would be like a super peak pose for beginner class.
Great.
You could practice.
Yeah.
And coming back is pretty difficult too. So try at least, we won't do half moon. Try warrior two and triangle against the wall. to see where your spine is and to see where your hips are in space. And to see. So that front line is at the 90 degrees, your toes are pointing forward, your back toes are slightly turned in. Straighten your front leg as best you can, and then hinge from your right hip and move towards the block with your hand. That's triangle. And we'll just see.
This is triangle.
Mm-hmm. So if you're against the wall, yeah, you'll start to feel your tendencies.
Yeah.
You don't have to go all the way down. Good. How's that feel?
Is that an eye opener for anyone?
Right here. Doing it against the wall does kind of like encourage people to kind of square their hips a little bit, though, right?
Not necessarily, because you want it, that back hip will come a little bit away from the wall.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Focus on the front hip in the externals. The front hip is what's moving back.
Seems like you could use the wall to make sure you're not squaring your hips.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't both touch.
They shouldn't both touch.
No. When you go into the external, you're just focusing on that right hip firming in.
So I'm wondering if another piece of not going into lateral flexion has to do with the legs being wide enough.
Yes. The legs need to be wide enough. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good. I'm going to try it on the other side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can put the block in front of you for that pose. Cause
what was that?
You can put the block in front of you. Traditionally, the block would be
That would have been easier.
Would be on the right.
Yeah.
But since you have the wall, that's your block, essentially. Yeah. Good. Yeah, these are good. Yeah. So do you guys feel that outer hip and that front leg? That's the one that we're focused on. Wanting to maybe jut out a little bit. Right, so firming that into the wall. It's that firming of the outer hip that I was talking about.
So you want to bring make sure the shoulders and arms are against the wall, not worry about your
Yeah,
naturally.
Yes.
Yeah, we keep them in.
You'd like to have the front loops in because in Tadasana, if not poking out, you're not in the back then. But the bony landmarks, remember we're talking about bony landmarks, when you're standing against the wall in Tadasana, it's your ankles, it's your sacrum or your tailbone, it's kind of the shoulder blades, and the back of your skull. Those are the four plates of your body that you're feeling for. Does that make sense? So if you were in a really deep back bend, you would know all of a sudden because you'd be like not a tub against the wall. Okay. Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. Parjva Konasana. Just so we know what that is, extended side angle pose. It's really the same as Warrior Two in many regards, right? So we're coming in from a neutral pelvis, neutral legs, externally rotating one leg, back heel goes out, right? So we're in, let's say Warrior Two again, straight spine again, my pelvis is in the transverse plane. There is a slight twist in my pelvis right now, yeah? So I'm in Tadasana, but I'm slightly rotated. And then when you go into this pose, Utthita, side bend, it's like going in like triangle, extending the side waist. We bring the hand down outside the ankle. Why outside? Because when you go inside, you start to see hips going like that. So outside, so that we're shaving that left outer hip back. And again, when I'm in an external pose, I really focus here because that's the leg that's at risk. So. Lift your arches. Firm the outer ankle in. Inner thigh lengthening towards the knee. Outer left hip wrapping back or shave it in or firm it in. And that's where I'm focusing. Okay? Back leg straight like Tadasana. As best as they can. You know, if there's a little bend, they're just tightening their hip flexors. But that inner thigh is pressing back. Top of the thigh is pressing back. Outer heel. Firming down. Okay? This is a variation. This is common. The full pose. The palm is turning towards the ear. The outer arm is firming in towards the ear. Utthita Asta in Tadasana. Arms. Okay? when I do like handstands and stuff, because this is a great one to prep for handstands.
That helps disengage the traps too for people who like to always hold their arms that go like this.
Yeah. That external rotation prevents the traps from being up in my ears now. I'm not crunched around my neck. Uh-huh. Yeah. Eventually, there's a twist or evolve. Okay. All right. Let's do the other side so we're even. That's the thing I have to work on.
It's not to say that you're not going to be in classes where they say put a block in the inner thigh. That's a cool thing to do if you're like really focusing on firming the hip, because you can work the arm into the knee and the knee into the arm, and it gives them a lot of articulation in the hip. So that's just another a variation. But traditionally, the hand is outside the ankle, okay, and the arm goes over the ear. Does that make sense? Any questions about that pose?
The back thighs rotating.
Back thigh will always be a slight internal rotation.
Internal.
This one's external, this one's a slight internal, but it still is, generally speaking, it's a neutral leg, it's in Tadasana. Like if I come up, the leg is still in Tadasana. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. Right? It might be just a little lengthening here. So they don't square.
Mm-hmm. I'm not squaring my hands.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Would it be helpful for you guys to teach a partner how to get in and out of one of the poses? And then we'll do, everyone's looking at the clock, so does this mean that we're ready for a little lunch break?
A little hungry.
Should we teach and then go? Or
why don't we teach one pose, and then teach a pose to your friend. If your friend can't do a pose, get into a pair of three. And, or you can teach me, I'm okay with that. And then after that, we'll take a half hour break. You can go outside, get some sunshine, we'll come back, and we'll do some more poses, okay?
Is that our lunch break?
Half hour.
Yeah.
Half hour for lunch?
Is that okay?
Well,
not quite.
I gotta go.
Oh.
I gotta go.
Well, usually
actually, I'm going to bring lunch. I brought my lunch.
Is it okay?
I brought my lunch, so I don't have to go somewhere.
45 minutes, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do 45 minutes. And here's the thing. We're here till 5. So I like to do intermittent dancing to get people's energy back up. So those will be our little breaks, just to get, so you're not like glossy eyed, which is where we get, I get it, because if we, you know, the way that we learn is really, you can only take in 20 minutes of information at a time. But in these teacher trainings, you kind of power through stuff, it's a lot, so I like that.
No candy bowl?
Yeah, right, well, we go get our caffeine or our chocolate or whatever it is. So let's teach each other. Let's do warrior two, because that's kind of like the most common, say, standing pose. Teach it from stepping out, right? Teach the feet, whatever line you heard, because each person will hear a different thing based on what their practice is. And then do this, bend the knee, have them just bend the knee. Rotate externally so the leg is parallel at 90 degrees, or the toe is pointing forward. Turn the back heel slightly in, or turn the toe slightly in. Some people teach it by heel. Turn the toe slightly in. Bend your knee to 90 degrees. And then just see what they're doing. If they're this way, try to get them so that their spine, I'll let you use your words to try to get them. Actually, whoever the partner is, do something weird.
I was going to say, if you want us to
do something like kind of funky, don't hurt your body, but so that they can actually teach you something and get you back to the neutral spine. Yeah?
Okay.
Just kind of be silly about it, but be safe too. Okay?
Silly and safe at the same time.
Do you want to do
it? Oh,
but I don't care.
Okay. I'll teach you.
I'm gonna
do. I'm on my mat. I'm gonna.
chomp.
Oh, it's like, oh, yeah.
The pinching lines to
twice.
I'm like, what do you call water?
Do you want me to take my sweater?
Okay. Yeah. I'm tired.
Yeah. And then we're going to straighten the back. And you're
going to
hit your foot.
Stretch your spine more.
Yeah.
Lengthen your waist.
Okay, let's start using
help.
Yeah, give her a little bit more instruction. So if it's not
lying up, head on, pick
up
this
way.
Twist
the face
down.
There you go.
Turn your foot out.
I didn't know
just
turning it on her foot.
Her
knee. So you, it'll tell you to go. Oh, I want you to externally rotate. I'm deep in your head.
Oh, yeah. And also the leg. And also on the heel.
Yeah.
Right. From the head on the heel, which is why my stance got shorter.
Yeah. Right. So now that short.
And also
all the
screen. All the
screen. Right now.
So like balance.
Look.
much.
But you don't want to detail them that much.
Wow.
That's there you go. And you're along that in your
but it's
waist.
All about balance, which is just like
your right foot and your toes slightly towards your left.
Just admit to mom that it's in. Yeah, it's starting. This is where I'm going.
Oh, yeah,
I know.